Thanks for listening to Olathe Wesleyan Church's online teaching. This week, Pastor Janetta continues our series, The Gospel According to John.
Good morning again. My name is Janetta Herrera, and I'm one of the pastors here at this church and also part of the teaching team. Last week, Jim was in chapter 4 of John, so if you wanted to look it up on your phones or Bible, or it will be on the screen. And he started with the story that's in that chapter is one of my favorite stories in the entire Bible. Does anybody remember what the story was about? Oh, wait, louder, what? Was that the woman at the well? I love that story. I love that story. I just love everything about that story. And I think he summed up the story very well when he said this: there is nothing that you or I can do that would make Jesus love us any more or any less. Think about it. It's like, wow, what an awesome truth. However, I'm skeptical. This isn't like a confession. It's not like, hello, my name is Jeanette and I'm skeptical. I'm just letting you know, I'm skeptical. In my head, it goes, yeah, right. After all, I hear politicians say things and I go, yeah, right. I hear Bernie that he's going to offer free college education. Yeah, right. I hear Trump say he's going to build a wall and make Mexico pay for it. Yeah, right. Not even liking that one, but yeah, right. I hear the attendance numbers of a large church event. And so if you're not part of church event things, then you won't get this one as well. But I hear those numbers and I go, yeah, right. I think you added more to it than what was really there. Yeah, right. I watched the video where LeBron James says, I won't win one, I won't win two, we won't win three, we won't win four, we won't win five, we will win six, we will win seven championships here in Miami. And I go, yeah, right. The Cubs are going to win the World Series. Yeah, right. Yeah, right. I'm going to win the lottery. Yeah, right. Shoot, I don't think I'm alone in this. I really don't. You know, there are things that are around us that kind of gear us up to be skeptics. And so being a skeptic can also be expected from us. Look, we round numbers up to make things appear better than they are. We round our dollars down to make things look cheaper than it really is. It didn't cost $20. It was $19.99. And I'm going, hello? We do that. I even look at the sports rosters of players. And their weight is heavier or their height is taller. Depending, and it isn't what reality is, but it's done that way. Depending on what the need is in order to intimidate, right, the opponents. So I go, yeah, right. They don't weigh that. They're not that tall. We try to present an image that makes us look better than we really are, makes our stories more dramatic, our love more sincere, and our intelligence more outstanding. Right? Reminds me of a statement that my friend Mindy Clark made this week. May your life someday be as awesome as you pretend it is on Facebook. What about you? Do you hear some things and think, yeah, right? Am I the only one? So, skeptics? Does that skepticism carry over to things that are spiritual? Like, what about the things of Jesus? Skeptical? You know, I can hear about miracles, and I have a tendency to say, yeah, right. Unless It was something that happened to me in my family. Otherwise, I'm in that camp of, yeah, right. So talking about skeptics, talking about being skeptical, let's look at our scripture today. John chapter 4, verses 43 through 54. At the end of 2 days, Jesus went on to Galilee. Stop. At the end of 2 days, Jesus went on to Galilee. You got to have a little bit of background with that one. So I have this map up here. You're going to see, oh, can you see it? Is that like way too little? Well, if you go clear up, see the Mediterranean Sea up there? If you go up to the Mediterranean Sea and go straight over, you're going to see this place called Cana. And it was at Cana that Jesus turned the water into wine. Then he walked down to where that circle is. That circle is Jerusalem. That's in Israel. And Jesus walked down there for the Passover. That was a really big deal thing, the Passover was. And while he was there celebrating the Passover, he happened to run out all of the riffraff and all of the money changers that were in the temple. It was a big deal. After that happened, Jesus walked out into the countryside of Judea where his disciples baptized other believers. But he didn't stay there. Jesus and his disciples then made a decision to go back to Galilee. That's where Canaan is. To go back up to Galilee, but they had to pass through this place called Samaria. They couldn't go around it, they couldn't go over it, they couldn't go under it, they had to go right through it. They went through Samaria, and they stopped at this town called Sychar, which is where the woman at the well story took place. That's where Jim was last week. He was right there. You know, they had a lot of good things that happened there. It was an amazing 2 days. It was an amazing 2 days. Many Samaritans came to believe about Jesus. No miracles took place. They just believed about Jesus. The disciples then and Jesus made a decision that they needed to move on up. Do you see that next circle up there? That circle is in Galilee. That place is called Cana. Remember what I told you happened to Cana just a little bit earlier? That's where Jesus turned the water into wine. Also, this part of Galilee, or Galilee itself, is the home to where Jesus was born, which is Nazareth. Those things are kind of important for you to know because of this next line. John records Jesus as saying, he himself had said, that means Jesus, had said that a prophet is not honored in his own hometown. Yet, the Galileans welcomed him. The Galileans were the people from his own hometown. Okay? Yet the Galileans welcomed him, for they had been in Jerusalem at the Passover celebration, and they had seen everything that he did there. Shoot. John's reporting the statement that Jesus made. A prophet is without honor in his own hometown. Yet, instead of giving us an example that proves that statement that he just said, a prophet is without honor in his own country, instead of giving us an example for that, Jesus instead gives us an example of the people welcoming him. Look what it says. Yet the Galileans welcomed him. Well, that seems to be in total contradiction to the next statement. Or so it would appear. Jesus had just come through Samaria, where I showed you on the map, and that was a place where he shouldn't be accepted at all because they were the low-class people, and that's not what they want. It wasn't liking them in any way, shape, or form. Because the people that Jesus grew up with were very mean to those people. It would be like one of us white people walking right down into the middle of Ferguson in the middle of the riot and saying, accept me. Jesus walked in through this place and they accepted him even though they shouldn't have, according to culture. But they accepted him, and they accepted him because He was the Messiah. There was no miracle there like what we've been thinking about. None. It was just Jesus saying, hey, it's me. I'm God. That was it. But there in Galilee, where it says that, but they welcomed him, you got to know they didn't welcome him for the same reason. They didn't welcome him because he was the Messiah. They welcomed him because he had been successful in other things. He had been successful in taking out the riffraff. He had been successful in turning the water into wine. He had been successful. So the people that came there weren't accepting him as Christ. They were accepting him as this amazing man that's done wonderful things. So on the surface, it seems like that statement, a man was not honored in his own country, wasn't true. But as we review it, it's truer than you think. Jesus wasn't accepted because of who he was. He was accepted because of his successes. People came to see him, and they wanted to see him do things because they were skeptics. They were skeptical. Show us more. 46. As he traveled through Galilee, he came to Cana, where he had turned the water into wine. There was a government official in nearby Capernaum whose son was very sick. I want you to go back to the map. You'll see another circle up there. That other circle is Capernaum. Canaan, where the arrow ends, and then Capernaum over here. That's like 20 miles distance. And what we know is that Jesus is in Cana, and the people there remembered all that he had done, and they were gathered around him. I equate it to like being gathered around a political candidate, that mob of people that come around that don't really like you. They only like you if you're going to do what they say around them. But Capernaum is 20 miles away. Keep that in your head. Next verse. When he, the government official, heard that Jesus had come from Judea to Galilee, he, that official, came and begged Jesus to come to Capernaum to heal his son who was about to die. The man had walked 20 miles to a place where he had heard about the reputation of Jesus doing amazing things. And he had walked because he wanted something special for his son who was dying 20 miles away in Capernaum. A desperate man who was in desperate need of a mighty miracle. And look at this next verse. Verse 48. Jesus said, "Will you never believe in me unless you see miraculous signs and wonders?" In my head, I'm going, how rude. The man just walked 20 miles. What the heck are you thinking? Of course it matters. Look, I just walked 20 miles. Then I had to do some more research. There's a word right up there. It says, will you? In our English language, you can be you as in you, Gilbert, or it can be you as in all you people. In the original language, that you is all you people. So I picture Jesus moving his eyes from that man and looking up at the crowd and saying this, will you never believe in me unless you see miraculous signs and wonders? Jesus was accusing them of just wanting more. Just wanting more before they would believe. Can you see the visual of it? Here's a group of people all the way around. And they're in the center of this circle is Jesus. And at Jesus' feet is this man who isn't paying any attention to the rest that's going around. He's just begging, and it says begging. He's begging Jesus to come and do something for his son. Please, come do something for my son. Please, come do something for my son. I need you to do something for my son. He's going to die. I need you to do something for my son. Do you think that those people that were around cared about that man's son? I'm not thinking so. I'm thinking they're sitting around, standing around, and they're eyeing each other. Wonder what he's going to do next. He better show up this time. Wonder what kind of miracle is going to happen. This is going to be so cool to watch. I think that's what they were doing. They were wanting Jesus to perform for them. They're wanting him to perform for them. And then you know what happens? I believe, oblivious to the crowd, the man continues his desperate cries. Look at the next one. The official pleaded, "Please, Lord, come now before my little boy dies." Then Jesus said, "Go back home. Your son will live." Jesus did not say, "You may go home." He didn't say, "It's all going to be okay and take this with you. Just go home." It was done in the imperative, which is an authoritative word, and it said, "Go home." As a parent, I can look at my kids and say, "Go home." They know that that doesn't mean there's any other option. Sit down. Listen to me. It was that kind of a word. Go home. Go home. I think the man has just walked 20 miles for his son. And what did he get for that? Was the man a skeptic now? Here's truth. I would have been. My skeptical thoughts would have kicked right in, and I would have said, God, that's not good enough. I got to have more. I got to have a sign. I got to have a piece of cloth. I got to have something. Not just go. Not just go. I got to have more. But what about that man? Look. The man believed what Jesus said and started home. I still think more had to be going on in that man's head. I wonder what that man thought about on that long trek back home. Do you think he said to himself, "Man, I just left behind my one chance for my son to get better"? Do you think that he questioned, "Did Jesus really heal my son? Step after step, did he heal him? Or when I get back, will he be dead anyway? Oh, I shouldn't have left Jesus. I should have grabbed him. I should have pulled him with me. What in the world do I have to rely on?" The man's saying, "I got nothing. I got nothing." He might have thought, "What will people think? I walked all this way and I'm coming back with what? Nothing." Or he might have thought, "What am I going to say? When I get back into the town, what am I going to say? That I just believed what that man said? They're going to call me a fool. They're going to call me a fool." Yet the man left Jesus. And he did what Jesus said. Next verse. While the man was on his way, some of the servants met him, and the news that his son was alive and well. He asked them when the boy had begun to get better, and they replied, "Yesterday afternoon at 1 o'clock, his fever suddenly disappeared." You see, the servants were sent to bring the guy back. It was no longer necessary for him to be gone. The whole household knew that he had been sick. The whole household knew of the awful type of sickness, that he was close to death. The whole household also knew that he had been healed and he was no longer sick. But listen to this. They didn't know why he was better. They just knew that he was. And this man had been sent off 20 miles. He no longer needed to be there. So if somebody no longer needs to do what they were doing, what do? We go back and get him and bring him back. So they were going back to bring him back. Look, you don't need to be there anymore. He's better. He's better. It wasn't necessary that he be gone. Then the father realized that this was the very time Jesus had told him, your son will live. And he and his entire household believe in Jesus. The mother, the father, the servants, the siblings, everybody that's around them. They had all sympathized with all the bad that was going on, and now he's better. And the man realized, oh, it happened right then. Because of the faith of the Father, they all believed. Had they seen Jesus? No. Had they had any connection with him? No. It was on the faith of the Father that they believed. He didn't excuse away the healing. He didn't say, ha, that's not really what happened. And he didn't go, yeah, right. He had a contagious faith that all the rest of them picked up on. He just believed. You know, it kind of reminds me, that kind of faith kind of reminds me of a statement that Joshua, my son, and Sarah, as they were getting ready to go to Haiti, they said, you know, God's opened this door. This is what we're supposed to be about. This is what we're supposed to do. We need $3,500, but if we don't get it, doesn't matter. We still go. God called. God said, this is what I do. This was the second miraculous sign Jesus did in Galilee after coming from Judea. That's added in on that. This sign affirms that Jesus was just not powerful over things like water and wine, but he had power over life and death. That not only did he create life, but he could recreate life. It was another sign that Jesus is who Jesus says he is. He's Lord. He's God. Jesus is who he says he is. We met at the Market Grill. We meet at the Market Grill every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock. As a teaching team, we get there and we go through the passages of scriptures together and we discuss and make each other irritated and push us on thoughts. And we have the same server every time. Her name's Lori. And I will tell you that when Lori started, the server we had before, we liked better. He was just really cool. And Lori was just different. She didn't remember stuff. You know, you'd order something and you'd get it wrong back or whatever. But you know, those things are always signs of something, right? It's always a sign. When people act certain ways, it's a sign of something. So on Tuesday, Lori happened to come over again and she was kind of talking and she started to share. Well, you know, my sister died earlier this year. She was only 52. And I'm thinking, oh, I bet that's right when she forgot everything. That's why she couldn't remember it. She was going through all kinds of stuff. She was going through all kinds of hell in her life. That's it. And then she went on. She said, my sister, Carrie, went to the doctor because she was having trouble seeing and things were messed up with there. They did the rest of the tests and found out that she was filled with cancer and had, like, no time to live. Lori said, I prayed. And Carrie died. And Lori goes, God must have a plan for Carrie. Then Lori looked at me directly and looked right in my eyes and said, what do you think? I said, I think we live in a fallen world and God is God. We left and I couldn't get that out of my head. I couldn't get her question and I couldn't get my response. I couldn't get it out of my head. I come in and the first person I wanted to see was Carol Freeman. Carol's right over there. I go, Carol, did you believe in Jesus even when Rudy wasn't healed? Even when he wasn't? This is my friend Carol and her husband Rudy, several years back. Rudy was diagnosed with diabetes 2 years before he was going to be able to retire from being an air traffic controller. Then after that, he was diagnosed with Parkinson's in 1998. Then after that, on July the 4th, as he's celebrating with his family, he had a horrible accident in water that caused him severe head trauma. Much prayer, much begging, much pleading on the part of Carol, her family, and friends. But Rudy died. In 2002, Rudy died, leaving Carol with huge medical bills, leaving Carol with a home that she no longer could take care of, leaving Carol with two young kids, 9 and 13, and having a 13-year-old through that time has lasting effects. Leaving Carol with a loneliness that nobody could touch. Leaving Carol with many unanswered questions and many unanswered prayers. You know what Carol said to me? She stopped, and in her Jamaican voice that I cannot do, she said, "That was never in my mind. I was angry at God. But to not love God, that wasn't in my mind. God is God. God is God." The story in John isn't about healing. It's not about how to get healed, if you should be healed, and this is the process for healing. In fact, healing, in my opinion, has nothing to do with why that story's there. That story is about believing. It's about believing. It's about asking yourself, what do I believe? Do I believe only if I get healed? Do I believe only if my job gets better? Do I believe only if people get what they deserve when they've hurt me? Do I believe only if I have a good relationship? Do I believe only if I pass the test I need to pass? Do I believe only if I get the home and the car and the good days that I need? Do I only believe then? And if I don't? And if I don't get them? Do I then go, where is God? Where is God in this? And does that lead me to, who is God anyway? Do I become a skeptic? So I ask you, what is your faith based on? What's it based on? Or I could ask you, what's it going to take for you to believe? One more miracle? One more answered prayer? One more question about the mystery solved? What will it take to believe? Leonard Sweet is a very smart biblical man, and he said this: faith is not questions to be answered or problems to be solved, but a mystery to be lived. The moment you solve the mysteries of faith to me, that moment I will cease to be a Christian. Or it's said another way in Hebrews 11, 1. Faith is being sure of what we hope for. It is being sure of what we do not see. You know, I think we could take everything this morning that I said and we could boil it down to this. Skepticism aside, come hell or high water, will you believe that Jesus is Lord? Come hell or high water, take Jesus at his word. Come hell or high water, do you hold on to the truth that Jesus loves you and he wants you to love him back? Come hell or high water, will you believe that Jesus is Lord? Let's pray.
Thanks again for listening to Olathe Wesleyan Church's online teaching. To learn more about us, visit us at www.olathewesleyan.org or visit us on Sunday morning at our 10:30 a.m. worship service. Thanks again.